Hello, here we are. Welcome back to the Strongest Diet podcast. Today you are with your hosts and producers and CEOs of the Strongest Diet podcast. Sophie Lane is an EP and she's an S&C coach and just a wealth of knowledge when it comes to all things running and coaching, isn't she? Welcome, Sophie Lane.
She is. Now, can there be two CEOs in a company?
Yeah, of course.
Yep.
Co-CEO.
I feel like they're always like, you know, someone's a CEO, someone's the CMO, CFO. I feel like we've got to nail that, you know, really define our roles. But we can go 50-50 with the cash, I guess.
I can go 50-50. I mean, that's not reflected in our current bank account situation. Anyway, that is a conversation for a different day. And welcome to the podcast, Lydia, who's a physiotherapist and an enthusiastic runner. And as it turns out, walker as well.
She is. She loves all the activities and she knows a thing or two about running injuries. So we are stoked to have her with us, aren't we? Why are we talking third person? Anyway, today we have the wonderful Dan Kavanagh on the show talking all things below the knee, podiatry, all that jazz. Specifically, Tib Post was kind of where we spent most of our time chatting about, but we will get into that shortly. First of all, Lydia, give us your updates. How's your fortnight been? What's working well? What's working not so well? And what is your action plan? I nail it?
I love it. I'm so glad that we're going to have a little structure and just work towards onwards and upwards, as I always say. I think that's my one of my most common little phrases I say, onwards and upwards. And I want
You've
us
got
to
a lot
have,
of phrases.
I do. I have lots of phrases.
A lot. Wealth of knowledge is one of them.
No, I phased that out, but I brought that back in today just for you. So hope you appreciated it.
Yeah.
No, you did it.
No, because you use it all the time. So it's kind of lost its value.
No, but I've gotten rid of it. I phased it out. I haven't said it for about 6 months. Today was a special day.
I brought it back in. Anyway, tell me.
Okay. I won't say it again for 2 years and then I'll bring it back and I'll use it at the right moment. Okay.
Great.
Mm-hmm. I use it at that moment. Anyway, my last 2 weeks have been a lot of ups and downs, I think it's probably fair to say. Last time on the podcast, I was speaking about various different injuries and they're all still there, except for my nerve pain. That's gone away, which I don't think I mentioned, so we don't need to talk about that. But that's gone in case anyone was wondering. But basically, my situation is definite mild, I'm going to say very mild bone stress in my fifth metatarsal. It's kind of in a weird spot. Like last week I ran 5Ks on Friday and it felt really good, felt awesome, no symptoms, maybe like tiniest bit of awareness. It's like hard to know if you're just being hypervigilant. And then the next day, no pain, hopping, no pain, nothing. And I was like, sweet. Like I think I'm going to do day on day off running, maybe even day on 2 days off and just kind of do like walk run 5Ks, 6Ks, probably not any more than that for the next 6 weeks because bones take a while to heal. Anyway, that was kind of my plan. And then did city surf on Sunday, which I did 6 times 6 minutes of running. So, or I did 6 times 4 minutes. I honestly can't remember, but yeah, I think that's right. Yeah. So what's that? 24 minutes of running. I was like, okay, cool. Like that's basically even less, but somehow I didn't pull up as well after city surf, which is very annoying. And I think truthfully, it was because of my dance moves on the dance floor. I don't think it was anything to do with the run because I think I just did a lot of jumping and heavy, like
your dance moves were very enthusiastic and very lower limb dominant. I feel like you could have done a bit more shimmying, a bit more like, you know, those little, where you do the little, you need the visuals.
On
anyway,
the peace signs?
Yeah, peace signs over the eyes, a little like sprinkler, those kind of things might be more appropriate. But the shuffling or whatever you were doing and the hopping, like that is not the priority for the dance moves when you've got a possible broken foot. But you're having fun. So sometimes you've got to live your life and sometimes you don't know what your limits are until you've tested them. So we found out dancing is off the cards for the next few weeks.
Well, it was like 4 to potentially 5 hours of jumping on the dance floor.
Yeah.
Like my dance moves are not that creative, but I will say I can now do the shuffle. Is that what it's called? I know that was like 10 years ago, but I learned it. So now I'm quite trendy. Is that what it's called? Why are you looking like that? You're concerning me.
Yeah.
It is the shuffle, right?
I think so. Yeah, I know. I saw it for so many hours. Like it took you so long to get it and then you got it and then you kept doing it.
So quickly.
You just lift your foot up, slide it back, lift it up again. Mate, I don't know. You made it look complicated. I was busy shimmying. Anyway, Too much dancing, anyway, too much time on the feet.
Yeah, foot is a little bit sore. It like regressed a little bit. And then I think we're kind of back on the up again. I am thinking about putting it in a boot for just like a week as like a little, or even not even a week, like a couple of days just to like settle it down. Basically, I'm trying to avoid having to stop, do everything. I want to keep walking and do all my things. But obviously it's a bone and bones usually take around 6 to 8 weeks to heal. And sometimes that's norm weight bearing. Often with metatarsals, you do go norm weight bearing. But if you're able to walk around pain-free, then usually you don't have to boot or norm weight bear. So kind of hoping that I don't have to do that, but I'm probably going to make my decision over the next few days because I do have a dancing occasion tomorrow night as well. So I just have to see how I go. I think I'm going to wear my joggers. I'm going to wear them. I'm going to put them on.
But so, you had your joggers on for this one.
Okay. All right. I might get a boot.
I think you need to do some seated dance.
I'm going to work on my shimmying and the sprinklers.
Keep the feet still and do all from the hips up.
Yeah, no jumping. I think that's it.
Do not leave the ground.
My left leg. Yeah, left leg. Anyway, that's the foot. That's the foot update. The hip update for anyone else who's following along. It is still a little bit of a mystery. I've had all my colleagues look at it again. I actually had an MRI and it's come back clear, which I'm so stoked about. Because not going to lie, guys, I was actually starting to get concerned. I had some bone stress on my superior pubic rami, but turns out there's nothing, which is awesome. But also still kind of leaves like a little bit of a puzzle of what's going on, because at the moment my hip's kind of hurting, getting, well, in fact you guys don't need to hear all about my hip, but basically it hurts all the time. So yeah, I'm doing less things. I'm getting the pool boy out, so I'm going to be using that in the water now, so I'm not even kicking my legs. And this morning I couldn't find my pool boy because I'd forgotten about it, but next time I swim I'll use the pool boy. But I just like did not kick at all, and I've forgotten how hard it is to like balance in the water when you don't kick at all, because I did a lot of pool boy swimming and like no kicking swimming ages ago, but you know, usually you have a pool boy and so it's so much easier to sort of like float, but it was really awkward. So anyway, the action plan for me for the next 6 weeks is project Get Really Strong. So I'm peeling back obviously my running, definitely. Hopefully I'll be able to do a little bit more swimming. I wasn't too sure how the hip was going to handle it because that has bothered it in the past, but it seems okay now that I'm not kicking. And basically just get really strong. So finishing off winter with a final little winter bulk or like strength bulk, maybe not hypertrophy. We'll see what happens. And then in 6 weeks time, I'm going to be like the Iron Man or the Iron Woman. And you guys are going to be like, wow, that is the strongest ride. Lydia is the strongest.
Iron Woman as in like made of iron or as in triathlete?
Oh, no. Shit. No, not Iron Woman.
That was confusing.
Oh, my gosh.
Like Steel Woman.
Like Steel.
Or Brick Woman made of brick. You know what your word of the year should have been? Durable.
Durable. Oh, no. My word of the year was space.
How's that going?
I did 6 minutes of yoga last week. So yeah, you guys remember the word of the year? Does anyone else remember the word of the year back
from hopefully everyone else created their word and they're sticking to it, because I sure am with my durability.
Well, I did 6 minutes of yoga, so
I, so what does that mean? So you've got space in your brain.
Yeah, that's the whole point. Like, you know what it is? The whole thing was more space, more relaxation. And I've taken up free diving and I do that every week. About once a week, sometimes once a fortnight, and that is very relaxing, meditative. And I'm getting into yoga 6 minutes for the year. 6 minutes.
You don't want to overdo it, you know, so start small. 6 minutes is better than no minutes.
It is, it is. Anyway, so that's my action points. Turn into a brick woman and do more pool boy swimming and walking, guys. If anyone wants to join me on some stargaze.
Oh, yeah, walks. Did you get any people show up last week? What were we talking about
today? That was this morning. Okay. So I had no one show up this morning for walk club, but that's okay.
Shame.
I only put the invite out to a few select WhatsApp groups, which had hundreds of people in them, but that's okay. Next week we're on for the walk group, guys. Mm-hmm. Every Friday morning, 5:20 at Clovelly Car Park in the dark, and we do some stargazing. We pet some dogs.
We pet some snails.
Some cute snails, if there's cute snails. You look for seals in the water. I saw a seal the other week. Just all the things. So, and a whale. Saw a whale. Cool. So it all happens every morning, actually, but that's just the one that's invited to the public.
Other ones are exclusive.
The other ones are exclusive. Yeah. So that's it. What about you, Soph?
Oh, whoa. Okay. I'm going well. I've had a great fortnight, actually. I got back from my ski trip after our last episode that we recorded together.
Oh, you're shredding.
I was shredding, doing flips, 180s, 360s, 720s, all the numbers. I had a great weekend last weekend doing high rocks and seated surf, and you can hear all about high rocks in my solo ep from last week. But basically a functional fitness race, which I did better in that than I thought, considering how unprepared I was. Lydia was a bit concerned about my body breaking, particularly the hamstring. But I seem to have pulled up okay. It's Friday now. That was on Saturday, and I've done 3 half-an-hour jogs, which is much less than I wanted to this week, but that's just how the week's panned out. And the body feels good. So plan is short run or like 10K run tomorrow, and then hopefully 25, 26K run on Sunday. See how the hammy feels from that. But touch wood, everything seems to be going well.
Nice. How are your hammy sliders going and your long lever elevated hammy bridges?
Yeah, they're lacking. Definitely.
What about your calf raises?
Yeah, they're lacking too, but I don't feel so bad about that because so yours are as well. So I feel like as long as
mine are lacking, I've got a broken bone in my foot.
But I'm in this with you. I'm supporting you. I've got empathy. If you can't do calf raises, I don't want to deprive you and rub it in and show off with my calf raises. Okay. So I'm supporting you. No, I will.
You should. Tomorrow. Just you wait till I turn into Steel Woman with my strong
Iron Woman.
Well, actually, I won't be doing heaps of calf work just yet, but I will be. I will be. Just you wait.
Yeah, me too. I was peaking and tapering and been a lot. There's just been so much. So I will get onto it. Thank you for the reminder. I appreciate that accountability from you. Next thing coming up for me is the big old marathon.
Sydney Marathon. That's me exciting. Too. Thank you.
Okay. In what capacity?
I'm working on Sydney Marathon. Oh, okay. I'll be good. There at the finish line. Doing some hands-on
taping me up
therapy.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, well, I'd actually love that. You up at the finish line. No, yeah, I'll be in the tent.
Yeah, can you give me a little rub down?
I can. Thanks. Yeah, if anyone wants a little rub down after the marathon, I'll see you in the ASICS tent. I will be
okay.
There.
Okay, cool. Yeah. I'll see you there. Well, okay. Yes, I'm going to do that. I haven't done many long runs over 20Ks for a long time. So we'll see. I'm going to test the hammy this weekend, go a little bit longer the following week, about 30-ish hopefully, and then it'll pretty much be taper time.
I know. I feel like our theme is just like, if in doubt, just taper. Just taper early. It is a good bit of advice, honestly. Yeah. If any doubt, just rest and recover.
Take it easy.
I think all you need to do, so this weekend, 26, next week, 31, and that's it. Done. That's your marathon prep.
31?
Yeah.
It'd have to be 30 or 32. I don't think I could handle 31.
Ah, come on, Soph. Mix it up. Live a little.
Do you think so? Then this weekend's the 20th and then 27th. No, I think I could still do something on the 3rd, 2 weeks out. Maybe a bit shorter. Anyway, we can plan that out.
Calf raises probably. That week.
All the weeks, every week, every day. Okay, I think that's enough from us. Do you agree?
I agree, definitely.
Great. Moving on to today's guest, the wonderful Dan Kavanagh, who is a podiatrist in the Gold Coast. In the Gold Coast, on the Gold Coast? I'm asking you, which one is it?
Yes. I would say on the Gold Coast. Yeah.
Would you say on Sydney? You'd say in Sydney.
In Sydney.
What's the difference?
It's a great question. In the Gold Coast is wrong, isn't it?
It is wrong, but why?
I think because it's the coast, on the coast. You live on the coast. I don't think you can live in the coast. Because it's the coastline. Yeah.
Interesting. I reckon. Okay.
Can you live in a mountain? On a mountain. Well, it's on a mountain.
Like yeah, I live in the Blue Mountains. I don't live on the Blue Mountains.
Oh, yeah, true.
No.
That's a good point.
Wow.
All right. Well, what about?
We just discovered. we're not just going to keep listing places.
What about Kofsama?
I think this is a conversation for another time. But if anyone knows what the rule is, my mum probably knows, to be honest. Anyway. Dan. Yeah, so he currently practices in the Gold Coast out of a few different practices, actually. Busy, busy man. Hinterland Podiatry, Pogo Physio, and Adjust in Coomera. Or on Coomera, depending on how you say it.
Anyway, this episode we spoke about tibialis posterior tendinopathy, which is a tendon which is in your lower leg, and it's really important for running. And this is something that's super common. It definitely comes into clinic all the time. I show a lot of patients with this. I think usually when people think of running injuries, they think of Achilles tendinopathy, knee pain, all that stuff. But the tibialis posterior is a very important muscle and tendon. very important for running. So if you've ever had pain around your ankles or underneath your foot, then this could be the episode for you. So be ready to take some notes, some mental notes or physical notes, however you like to take your notes, digital, if you're trying to save the trees. And if you also just like want to reduce your risk of injuries, or maybe you have an interest in just being a better runner, because anytime we can improve our strength and our lower limb, it can reduce our risk of future injuries and improve our performance, then this is your episode and Dan is your guy.
Yeah, we also talked about shoes and orthotics and strength and rehab. We talked about Dan's background and just had a general really nice fun chat. So even if you don't have tip post injuries or you aren't interested in feet, give it a go. I think you'll thoroughly enjoy it. Thank you so much for listening. Please subscribe and rate us 5 stars. Follow Dan on Instagram. It will be linked below, but it is also at Dan Cav Podiatrist on Instagram. And yeah, go and see him if you're in the Gold Coast or on the Gold Coast. And check out our links below for some discounts on Tailwind and Vivo Barefoot. And we will speak to you. Lydia will speak to you next week. I will speak to you with Lydia the following. Thank you. Good night.
Awesome stuff. Ciao. Now, first question is, can you please tell me how you pronounce your surname before I introduce you?
Oh, surely you've got that one.
Well, I just want to check, because, I'll just go for it.
Kavanagh, surely it's Kavanagh. Kavanagh. What?
Kavanagh,
like banana. Where did you get that from? Honestly, we've had tricky names. Like, we have had complicated names, and it is good to check, but I feel like this one's relatively, like, you've surely heard it.
If you ever go to Kempsey, my name is on all of the buses in Kempsey, so you'll never forget. I know, it's a beautiful place, that Kempsey.
I wanted to ask you about that, actually, but let's just, can I introduce
you? Oh, no, but this is good. Oh,
welcome to... Well, welcome back to the Strongest Diet Podcast. Today we have expert podiatrist Dan Kavanagh on the show, joining us today all the way from, tell us, Dan, where are you from?
So I grew up in Southwest Rocks. It's a town just near Kempsey, before Macquarie, Coffs Harbour. But currently I practice on the Gold Coast, and I'm a little bit all over the shop in the Gold Coast. I'm in 2 days at Hinterland Podiatry in the rain. And then on Tuesdays, I'm at the Living Well Studio in Burleigh Heads and Hogo Physio in Ravenna. And today is Wednesday, so I'm at Coomera at Adjust Physiotherapy.
Oh, all over the place. That must keep you busy.
That's awesome. And I was so excited to read your bio when it said that you grew up on the Mid-North Coast, because I used to live in Coffs Harbour. And so so I was like, oh my goodness, I wonder where from. And Southwest Rocks is such a beautiful spot. So what a wonderful part of the world to grow up in.
Yeah, you don't appreciate it when you're younger, but when I come home, it's just like, you know, you've got the best beaches, you've got awesome running if you look for it. The sneaky trails and that, like, you just appreciate it so much more.
Oh, amazing. Yeah, I mean, there's just so much to see. Like, the whole Mid-North Coast is stunning. Amazing. I mean, I love to chat about all your running recommendations, but I think we should
this isn't a tourism ad for Southwest Rocks.
But tell us a little bit about yourself, Dan. Obviously, we know where you work, but tell us about your journey into podiatry and your interest in running.
Yeah, so originally I was studying nursing. One of my older sisters, she said to me over a late night glass of whiskey, "Dan, don't do nursing. You're not going to like it. If I did something different, podiatry." And I was like, "That's weird. Why would you think that?" And then she's like, "I don't know. I just that's just what I would have done." So I looked into the course like that week, and being offered alongside nursing unit, Southern Cross University, the Gold Coast. And I just did one of the podiatry units whilst I was studying. And in that unit, this lady came in. She actually had 2 hours posterior tendinopathy, and she was like barely walking when she came in. It was really affecting her. And within 3 weeks, there were some exercises, some orthotics, footwear changes, and she was literally walking again. And that was my buy-in. I was just like, "Oh wow, I can actually make a bit of a difference." So I put my head down for a few years and came out the other end.
Yeah, wow. I think that's something so special about podiatry. I know that you'd probably get similar things across different fields, but having that kind of instant result or instant change where you can literally do something then and there, and then suddenly, oh wow, I feel better. Where I know in my line of work, exercise physiology, it's you require a bit of patience. There's a bit of time involved. You know, do these exercises, we'll progress them. And a few weeks, you'll probably feel better. But if you can have that instant change, and I guess, as you said, the buy-in, and you probably get that from your patients as well. But as a student, knowing that, wow, I can actually make a difference like today, I imagine that's pretty powerful.
Oh, definitely. It's just such a, it's not a fix, it's a band-aid. But yeah, when you get a really good result, like when you combine it all, is when you get those best results, I've found. That's, I guess, why I love working with like physios and even exercise physiologists. There's a few around the coast that I get to refer to, and they're excellent. So yeah, it's a big picture, isn't it?
That's awesome. I think too, there's something about feet that compared to other parts of our body.
I don't know why feet are so funny, but they just are.
The
hands on the bottom of this, like, what's going on?
Well, I think they're wonderful. I think feet are great. And we can't, like, obviously they're connected to us. They're hard to offload. Like, if we want to go anywhere, we have to take our feet with us, obviously. Like, I don't know. Now it sounds so
good. We have to pack them in our bag and we've got to carry them around.
But, like, if we think about any other part of our body, like, I think, we like if it's our arm, we can sort of like, you know, rest it or like put in a sling or something, or like even our knee, or I hope we can sort of like change how we walk. But there's not heaps you can do if you've got foot pain. And for a lot of people that I see in the clinic that have got pain on their foot, like it's really hard to offload them, especially if they've got a job where they're on their feet all day. So I think exactly what you said, like you make a huge difference not only to someone's sport potentially, but just to their everyday life. Like people got pain standing and they have to stand for work, then it's really tough.
Yeah. And it also adds to, then there's like the other, like it's a double-edged sword, because sometimes like things that are aggravated that can't provide relief and they expect relief. And everyone's looking like, you know, like everyone's looking for that pharmaceutical that if you pop a pill and everything's great. But unfortunately it's not the reality sometimes, and things take time. I guess like little wins are good, but then there's the other side. You do get a little bit caught up when you can't fix something straight away, and you got to be very patient with yourself. So the first few years you're always battling with oh, why is this not working, when really you've got to trust the process, I think.
Yeah, it's definitely more complex probably than people would like it to be. Tell us, you're a runner as well and you treat a lot of runners, is that correct, Dan?
So I'm a terrible runner.
Oh no.
I love it. That's what matters. All that matters is I love it. I'm a very happy runner when I am running. So I started running about 4 or 5 years ago when I realized that that's sort of where I want to put my efforts. And coming out of podiatry, and I was with a physio called Sam Elaine. He's one of my best mates. And he was getting into his running, and another one of my best mates is getting into his running. He's a really good coach in Brisbane. His name is Tox Robinson, and we all just, started. We're already hanging out, so running just came a little bit of a part of it. But I go slow. I'm very, very injury prone. My Strava description just says made of glass. But yeah, I've had a lot of lower limb injuries, so it's really nice to, be a little bit of a part of the patient's journey when they have something, and I've had it before too. Right now I'm just at the half marathon mark, and I did my first race at the Gold Coast half marathon a few weeks back, and I just loved it. Like everyone was so stoked, and I've never seen like a better morning for it. Like the sun was rising over the water and everyone had a big smile on their face. It wasn't too hot, wasn't too cold, so
love for it. That's so good. There's so many parts to it, I think, that non-runners just wouldn't quite be able to grasp, because I think from the outside you could think like, oh, they just run, like that must be horrible, that must be hard, it must hurt your body, and you get all puffed out and it's really uncomfortable, it's hot and sweaty. But I think that social aspect where, like as you said, you're just going to hang out with your friends anyway, so why not just go for a jog while you're doing it, and then having these really fun events where the city puts on a show, and it's a celebration of that run. And whether or not you're competitive doesn't really matter, it's just about being there with new people and enjoying that experience. So I think that's really cool that you've said that. And you said just half marathon. I think we need to cut that out. Excuse me. Because a half marathon's huge. Like that is amazing. And you don't have to do anything longer than that. Like there's no reason to go further if that's not something you're interested in. But I think half marathon is amazing. So congratulations. Well done.
Yeah, even 5K, I'd be stoked. Like I remember when I did 2.5 kilometers and I was like, wow, that was such a big run. So like it is, like that's another part of running. It's so fun. It's such a personal thing. Like I'm treating people that come through, and know, they're doing like ultras. I'm going to be a part of a little team where they're coaching the ultra marathon, the Kosciuszko one, where they come in and they see me for their team, and they work alongside a physio and a running coach. And they're doing this huge distance, except like, you know, we both love it the same.
That's a good point. And yeah, I guess it doesn't matter how far you go or what you do, but your passion can be the same, right? And I think just that general consensus of just enjoying the run and getting to experience that regardless of what that looks distance-wise or statistic-wise, that's really cool. And that's going to be a really cool experience too. I think being a part of someone else's journey, like that's probably why we're lucky being in our industries, is we don't even have to just go for a run to enjoy it. We can be a part of someone else's run and support them and crew for them or get them back to their running. I think that's really special. All right, shall we get into today's topic? So we're going to talk about tib post and peroneal tendon injuries. But to kick us off, do you want to give us a little bit of a broad understanding of what actually is a tendinopathy? Maybe what is a tendon, first of all, and why these types of injuries are so common with runners?
Yeah, so essentially a tendon is the end of our muscle. So we, when we run, our muscles have to exert a lot of force and it's very repetitive. And these tendons, so the tendon attaches, pretty much connects the muscle into the bone. So seeing it so repetitive, sometimes we expose them to a little bit too much load, too much repetition, or we've had other external factors that are coming into things and internal factors, and the body can't handle what we've asked it to do. With that, sort of get a pain around these areas where the tendons run, and it warms up a little bit, so it might feel really bad in the morning, might slowly get a little bit better. It's got a lot of little things that you can pick up in the history when you're sort of looking for them. But essentially, yeah, just it's a very complex structure. It can store energy, but it's also super strong as well, and probably stronger than we give them credit for. And the paradigm's really changed. We used to think of rest them, but now we think, oh, okay, maybe it's quite a good balance of rest and then also strengthening. So we know that load actually fixes tendons. So we've got something that's sore, and we have to ask it to do, you know, a lot of work to get better. And it's sort of a bit counterintuitive, but with time, you sort of learn that, yeah, loading it up, making it really strong is what does help it get better. Just is really nice to just be in that, you know, balance of offloading and loading, introducing exercises and all of that, but also giving the small wins to take a little bit of pain away along the way. Does that sort of make sense?
Yeah, it certainly does. Would you better explain or maybe like give the listeners a bit of an understanding of things that they could look out for to know that they've got a tendon injury? Because obviously we know that runners tend to injure their tendons a lot. Like it's a very, I'm just so good today, aren't I? Like it's a very common runner's injury. It's the structure in the body that gets heck of a lot of load, like you said. And so a lot of the times if a runner's injured, it likely is a tendon. Like we could guess that. But are there things that we can look out for to know, oh, that's a sort of tendon pain pattern? Are there things that a listener would be able to spot in themselves?
Yeah, so the warm-up phenomenon is a big one that we talk about, where the tendon gives us a bit of pain maybe at the start of the run or during our warm-up, and then we sort of forget about the pain. And it gets quite warm, so we're just not really thinking about it too much. It might have escaped our mind. But then after the run, it might come back after we have a little bit of a rest. And then with lower limb tendons, they come on quite commonly after we've sat and then we just got back up. So if it's really aggravated, it will give a lot of pain. Like it'll have that building pain, it's very aggravated, but usually we're looking for a little bit of pain and then during our warm-up, and then it sort of disappears, we forget about it. And also morning pain, pain after rest, that sort of thing is what talks to us a lot. And then, yeah, then there's the other side of things, like the sheath of the tendon, where that pain can be really irritated straight away and it doesn't quite change throughout. It just gets more and more irritated, and that makes it even more complex and fun. So that's where all of us come in.
Yeah, and you mentioned as well that your previous thought was around resting, but in fact actually that's probably the worst thing to do. Do you think that's the biggest mistake that you see patients make, is too much rest, or are there other things that you commonly see people do that are just like really counterproductive for their tendon?
Yeah, I'd say not too much rest, but more I think the biggest mistake people make with the tendinopathy is not getting it seen nice and early. So if you have a niggle, every runner gets niggles, you'll go through it. But if you have a little niggle, you know, if you have never explored, if you've never had the niggle before, it's lasting for a little bit longer than what you'd expect. You might say like 3 to 5 days, it's really getting worse, or you're just worried. If you go and see a health professional who runs and knows about running and looks at that area of the body, then the worst that comes out of it is you get education that's going to help you go, you know, be a better runner and have a bit more security of it around the niggle. And like, it's really a win-win scenario. You could have a tendinopathy, it's diagnosed early, you get everything in place nice and early and get better outcomes because of that early intervention, or you could find something else going on and only benefits that come out of it, really, in my opinion.
Yeah, true. I think it's interesting that whole resistance to seeking treatment early. It's almost like, I don't know, runners want to be seen as tough and, oh no, I can push through it. Like, pain's normal. But I think it just helps so much. Like, if you can, as you said, get to it early, your rehab's probably going to be way shorter. So you're going to spend less time off running. Therefore, you're probably going to have a much better outcome and have a much better result. But I think it's really hard when you're in the moment, when you are experiencing that pain, you kind of think, oh, I'll just try another run, or I'll leave it another day. And that kind of just gets pushed out further and further until suddenly the injury is much worse than it probably was when you first noticed it.
Yeah, definitely. In the foot, obviously I only see foot and ankle, shins as well, but a lot of knees lately actually too, but that's only just part of it. But essentially in the foot, like, for some reason people just think because I can still walk, I'm okay. So we see this, I commonly get tendinopathies and lots of lower limb injuries where they're like, oh no, I can walk, it's fine, when really there's applying a lot of load to these that have a little bit of an irritation to them. So yeah, that's just part of the fun with podiatry, I think.
Yeah, it's amazing the desire to just like keep on. I've had so many patients that will tell me the same thing, like, oh, I can still walk, like it actually doesn't really hurt that much. And then you look how they're walking and they're like not putting any weight through their heel, or like they're really supinated, and I'm like, what do you mean you can still walk? Like, okay, it doesn't hurt if I do this. Like, oh my goodness, like this is ridiculous. But you know, I laugh at that because I also relate to it too. Like, I've had so many injuries that I've sort of just offloaded without even fully being aware of it myself, and then I'm like, oh, I'm running so different than normal. So I think having that opinion from someone, as you said, like worst case scenario, you get a bit of education and you learn more about your body, which is only going to enhance your running from either an injury prevention or performance perspective. So yeah, really important to get it checked, I think, for sure.
Even just going into the consult, like if you're worried about something, I'm sure you can think of other questions for this health professional. If I was to go see a physio and I've got a sore, like my knee starts playing up, then I would think, oh, actually, I also should probably check if I've got good strength throughout my chain and should make sure that everything's good. So I'd go in with a few other questions, like if you're coming to see a podiatrist or some pain on your foot, or a physio for your pain on your foot, I'm sure there's something else that you could ask a health professional that would benefit your running as well.
Yeah, you won't be wasting your time. I don't think, provided you're seeing the right person. So tib posts, let's talk a little bit about tib posts to start with. What is that? Where is it? And kind of why is it relevant to running?
So the tib posts, so the tibialis posterior muscle, it's a really, really strong muscle. I think it's got a huge role to play in the resistance of pronation. So pronation is movement, just like dorsiflexion. So it's when the foot rolls in is the simple way to describe it. However, it's actually a combination of three movements. So this muscle, it sort of resists how the foot goes up. So dorsiflexion, rolling in of the foot, so the eversion, and adduction as well. So it's resisting. The abduction is what's resisting. But yeah, essentially what it does is it resists the rolling in of the foot. And that's a really natural shock absorber that we have. So it's got a big muscle belly that runs along the inside of the leg, and then it goes behind our ankle and it starts to turn into the tendon. And it's quite a long tendon, and it has attachment points all through the middle of the foot. So the attachment points goes on to about 4 to 5 bones. There's a bit of variation between everybody. So it's really one of these things that has such a big role in foot function.
Yeah, and for a listener, like shock absorption and like pronation, obviously pronation is something that is considered, well, I know it's got a bit of a bad reputation for being something that's like bad or damaging. But would you be able to explain, like, you know, like why is that pronation important, and how does that actually help us shock absorb when we run?
Yeah, so essentially as we hit the ground, we've got a lot of energy transferring through the foot. So with pronation, if not only transfer as the compressive load of the foot hitting the ground, especially if we at the back to the midfoot as well, we can sort of let that energy transfer through a lot more structures if we do have the rolling in of the foot. So that pronation, if we have a very rigid foot as we hit the ground, it's going to mean a lot of shock. So the ground reaction force can't be dispersed as a big thing. So that's the force of the ground on the body. Once we roll in, we can actually just spread it a little bit more evenly through the rest of the foot. And that means the same structures aren't having the same repetitive forces onto them, which shares the load and allows you to be a little bit more adaptive.
So I guess we want like a nice balance of like being able to pronate, but not be too floppy, but also not be too stiff. And the way that people can tell if they are pronating too much or not pronating enough, maybe their foot's too stiff, like, are there things that a runner would be able to test at home, or is it something that you really need a health professional to actually have a look at?
Well, that's a really good question. Pronating too much is really, really difficult. It's just like asking, does somebody dorsiflex too much? Does somebody plantar flex too much? So if you are worried, it's just more, do I pronate too much? Well, a better question is, am I having pain whilst I'm running, or do I feel inefficient when I'm running? So when I'm doing a hop, can I keep my heel nice and like straight, or is my heel always hitting the ground? Do I feel like the middle of my foot is always rolling in and I don't have any control over that? Because you can look at with the tibialis posterior, like it's a tendon that resists the pronation. So if you feel like you're rolling in, you have no control whatsoever over it, then perhaps this tendon needs a little bit of work just to stiffen it up, strengthen it up, and give you a bit of support along the way.
That's probably a really good point, because I think years ago, like I remember when we worked in the shoe shop, which wasn't even that long ago, but people would talk about that, I don't know what you call it, like you put your foot in water and then you like stamp your foot on the ground and then you can see like how flat your foot is. But it's so like, I mean, it's irrelevant as we know now, but it's so kind of passive, whereas like doing a hop test where you can actually see what's happening when everything's moving, everything's kind of working together, how are the different structures and different movement patterns assisting each other, I think makes so much more sense and is so much more, I guess, correlated to running. So that's really cool. I guess, people can have a little hop in their kitchen and see how it feels and see how it looks. And if there's any issues that come up, or I think any pain too, I think often people are just running with so much pain, but if we're hopping and we're getting the pain, that's probably a bit of an indication that there is something going on. And then you can go and chat to someone like yourself about what might be happening.
Definitely. We love a hop test.
Favorite.
Yeah. I guess that was the next question that I'd be curious to ask, is what do you think is a really strong indicator that someone actually has tib post tendinopathy, like, or has got pain? Because obviously, like, it's a relatively long tendon, there's various different attachment sites. So where do you most commonly see the pain, and what's usually the most provocative type test for it?
So usually we can get it with a calf raise. It's a little bit inverted. So the way that I do that is I find it presents a lot whenever I do a single leg calf raise, slight bend in the knee. We put the pressure on the outside of the foot as we go in, because as we put our pressure through the outside of the foot, so our little toes, we're going to naturally invert the foot. So that means that tib post is doing a lot of load to keep it in that position. We sort of see that. And if it's, you know, in that area that we're looking for, that inside of the ankle, then that's one of the things we might look at. And then we might do a hop test where we're doing the hops and you see that pain on the hop. But then some people who are more elite, they might get this irritation. And it only comes on when they're running. So that's when we listen to them a lot. So we listen to how it presents, we listen to their descriptors. Because on clinic, I'm not going to get them to run 20 kilometers and then assess it. So it really is a very patient specific thing. The other big thing is there's an insertional tendinopathy as well as a mid portion. So there's the long bit of the tendon, which can be annoyed, and there's where the tendon actually attaches to the bone. And that's one you've got to be really careful with, because that presents at the site of pain. in around the navicular area. So the navicula is one of the foot bones that doesn't have a very good blood supply. So if you feel like you're getting pain around that area, so that's around the middle of the foot on the inside, then you really want that checked out nice and early, because if it's not an insertional tip post, then it's really good to look at the history thoroughly in the patient and make sure it's not that navicular stress reaction or anything, because that's something we really need to be on the ball about.
And would the treatment differ then for those two injury sites, or is it more just a matter of ruling out anything more sinister if it's in that area near the navicular?
Yeah, I think with the treatments, with an insertional one, it's a really difficult one to treat because of the complexity of the insertion. It inserts into a lot of different areas through there. And one of the common treatments for tibial posterior tendinopathy that we use alongside all of our strengthening, load management, and that is of wedging, padding, and orthotics to offload the area. And if you were to put some of the prefabs in there for somebody with a lower arch, so that's an off-the-shelf orthotic, and they have a lower arch, it's just going to add this huge compressive force onto the insertion and create a lot more drama than we need in the first place. So just like every tendon or every structure that we have in the foot, we've got to think about the compressive force that we have applied to these areas, as well as the tensile, so the pulling force. So that's like when we do our hop and the tendon lengthens and contracts, that's the tensile force, but that compressive force comes into it as well.
Yeah, it definitely makes it complex because, you know, as you said, like treatment options might, like someone might put some sort of arch support or orthotic or wear like a quote unquote sort of supportive shoe and think that they're doing the right thing, and then their pain gets worse, and then there's this, oh my goodness, like what actually is it? Is it something worse? And I guess obviously my brain goes straight to bone stress because that's something else that's quite common in that area. But the reality is it's just quite a complex tendon, and you know, just the difference in management, obviously, like it still needs to be loaded, but there's just going to be some, I guess, probably more precise management, especially in those early stages.
Yeah, definitely. Like you can utilize the rib foot a lot with insertional. You can do a lot of your deep loading through the rib foot, working on the subtalar joint a lot more. And that's something that I find super effective. And then, yeah, with the strengthening and the exercises for it, then we still do all of our normal, like tibialis posterior or any of that medial compartment exercise sort of therapy. And that's where you sort of see like the podiatrist and the physiotherapist coming into it a real lot, because they've got to strengthen it. It is a tendon that reacts really well to load. We know that, but it also needs a bit of a break as well, because it does a lot of work. When they're angry, giving it a break as well as strengthening it is sort of like the recipe that I really get a lot of results from the tendons that I work with.
Yeah. And how do you find that balance between keeping some load in there and keeping them moving and making sure it's just not complete rest, but also not overdoing it? Like, have you got certain strategies that you use to kind of maybe monitor their symptoms, or do you have a kind of generic plan that seems to work and then you just modify it for different people? How do you even, I guess, when you're looking at all those factors of different training load, speed, hills, volume, kilometers, and then life stress, and then deloading as well, how do you kind of paint that picture for the patient to understand, like, this is our plan? How do you go about that?
I guess I do like to make sure that there is some element of offloading in it, because when we think about the foot's role, we've got our training forces, and then we've got something that I talk about a lot, which is cumulative load. So that's how we use the foot all day, as well as our training forces on top of that. So every single step, we average around about 10 to 20,000 steps a day. So that means that the tibialis posterior tendon is loaded up to 10,000 times a day. So there's our training load, which is a big part of it. We implement different strategies for that. But I'm really big on focusing more on our passive loads, and then making sure that we are decreasing load through the day by doing some sort of like offloading to it, as well as our strength training for it, and then being able to just alter our training loads a little bit so that we can still do what we love whilst making it better, essentially. Like, you're not going to, you know, every runner wants to run, so they're not going to hang around if I just tell them, oh, you can't run, you can only do exercises, you can only have this sort of offloading. Yeah.
And what would be the first sort of things that you would get a runner to sort of peel back in their weekly regime? Like, let's say they are at a high level where they're walking around relatively pain-free, you know, maybe it's just if they're like really stiff or after a workout, what sort of things do you think would be the first to get rid of to try and deload it?
Once again, great question. I guess the best thing to do, like obviously intensity adds a lot more load to these sorts of things. So we look at intensity and we see, depending on the runner's goals or the athlete's goals, I should say, if we can have a little bit of a break in the intensity through that. And then it is also very foot type specific and like anatomically specific as well. Like you can't offload certain things. And then in terms of heels, like there's going to be a lot of load going through it well as we go into a deeper sort of step, because it needs to pronate then resupinate the foot as we propel forwards. That means just helping it go off the big toe joint, so that's another thing that we try and lower if we could, and then also having a look at running surfaces. So camber is a big one. So on lots of roads we have a slight little angle on a lot of roads to let the water come off the road into the gutters. So if we notice that we're running on a surface with a really high camber or anything like that, then we might try and get it onto a nice flatter surface. Or if we're on a track and we're doing a lot of track work, then we might think about going the opposite way, because there's also that sort of force when we get a little bit, we're going left all the time, you know, it's not going to hurt too much to go right, take a bit of force off there. And that might be a few little tips and tricks that help someone.
Yeah, I think that's really helpful. I think there's probably a lot of people who wouldn't have never have considered that. I think it's common for us to consider the intensity being maybe a trigger, but little things like that, I think that's really helpful and just shows how intricate the foot is and how little things you can change can actually have quite a big impact. What about kind of strength and rehab exercises? What do you sort of look for there? We've got, you know, deloading, managing load, changing some of those variables. What are you looking at in terms of the actual strength component?
So making sure that everything is strong is something that I really encourage. That's why I love working alongside other health professionals. You've got to make sure everything's going well. And it's sort of whenever we decrease any sort of like training intensity or that, then it's this really good opportunity to strengthen up everything and make sure it's all good. So specifically with our posterior, we look at the plantar flexors a lot because it has a role in plantar flexion. And then we can do these little things that isolate a little bit more. To keep it simple, you can go through the outside of the foot with any sort of calf raise variation. You want to be doing straight leg and bent knee as well, just because, you know, it works in such a different way that you want to make sure you're looking after all of it. But then at the same time, you don't want to neglect the lateral compartment as well. So like we might do some sets of more laterally loaded calf raise, sort of going on the outside of the foot. And then we might do a set to finish off through the inside of the foot as well, just to make sure that we're holistic in the treatment and remembering we're not just treating one thing, we're treating the patient and then it's too strong everywhere if they're going to return to run safely.
And sorry, Dan, just to explain that a little bit further, the kind of lateral medial aspect, how do you actually change, I guess, your position or setup for those that are listening, trying to visualize it? How would you target those different areas kind of practically?
The easiest when you do your calf raise and you're rising onto the ball of your foot, you go onto the outside of the foot. So you imagine the little toe joint and the guy next to it, you sort of aim to go over there a little bit. Another cheeky trick, I think there was a study on this one and how it activates the medial compartment a bit more, is where they put your feet in, like, you know, pigeon toe. And then you do calf raise like that, and that might do it as well. And if it's not like a high load, if you do a really sensitive double support, so both feet on the ground, a really common one is you can put a ball between your heels and you can squeeze the ball, and that'll force the tip toes to activate a bit as you do calf raise up and down. That's another cheeky trick. And we've got that once you get more complex, you've got resistance bands coming into it as well. You get really targeted, you do all of your inductions, so bringing the foot inwards and stuff like that. But at home, doing calf raises already at home to strengthen up, then make sure that you're not going easy on yourself. Make sure if you're doing 10 quite easily, like it's very easy to add a bit more weight into that. You don't have many excuses. We all went through COVID and got creative with our weights. So I'll tell my patients that they don't have weights. I'm sure they've got a backpack. I'm sure they've got some luggage. And I know that Jetstar is strict on 7 kilo rule. I'm not. So yeah, I think it's just going to be versatile with what you've got at home. And as long as you strengthen the plantar flexors, the post will have some sort of response to it that we enjoy.
And what about if it's too painful to do that? Is there anything you could do in the early phases, or should you just be doing like a double leg calf raise?
Yeah, so you can start seated, you can start with weights on your knee. There's always little things we can do just to keep range of motion, keep it as happy as possible. When it is in that activated stage, you want to have it offloaded. So you want to be in the shoe that feels the best. You don't want any pressure in that area. If you feel like you've got a shoe and it might have arch support, quote unquote, make sure that arch support doesn't hurt more, because if it hurts more, then even though you might perceive it as being good for it, it might not be the right thing just because it's not right with your anatomy and condition.
Yeah, and apart from the shoe being comfortable, are there certain characteristics that people should be looking out for if they are struggling with their tip post? Are there components of shoes that might be more comfortable, or I guess support is such a tricky word, isn't it? But be more comfortable for that person.
I guess like we've gone away from the medial posting, so that's whenever we have a lot of a firmer density on the inside, and that is meant to sort of put our foot in a position where it reduces the rate of pronation. We've gone away from that lately. Like you'll see with the update with the ASICS Kayano, where they've taken away that firmness on the inside, and now what they use is geometry a lot more. So I always look for a stable base of support, and it's also really important to get fitted properly, because you know, if it looks like you do pronate a lot, you know, you might be completely motion and you might actually do the opposite. And then you go into a supportive shoe, so like a medially posted shoe, we might say, and actually load up the outside a little bit more than what you were looking for, and it can lead to other problems. So yeah, getting fitted is the biggest thing, I think, with you know, people, getting fitted with people you trust. Like I only use essentially one, the athlete's foot on the coast, just because I've got a really good relationship. I've gone in and talked to them about the shoes that they teach in a very specific way. And yeah, I just really think having a good relationship with the running stores that you see, starting with a good shoe for it.
And then what about when we are actually running? Are there certain things that we can do with our Strike pattern to offload the tip post, or do you think that's going to cause more issues? Like, should we be playing around with cadence? Should we be adjusting our step length? Are there certain things that you might look out for, or in particular, maybe there's some biomechanical factors that you just see more commonly, which a patient might be able to address whilst they're doing their rehab and they're offloading?
Yeah, step width is really probably the one that has a little bit of backing behind it. However, I try to leave a runner's sort of form to themselves. Like, they run a lot more than the, you know, 20 minutes I might see of it in clinic, and they know their bodies really well. Cadence, like when we know that when we increase cadence, we do get a good result. It's one of those cheeky things to reduce a little bit of the force going through these structures as we take more steps. However, there's also a limit to that. Like, we're not going to be, you know, running around like Flintstone feet just burning the ground up. So yeah, I think it's something that I sort of look at, but it's not something that I focus too much on, just because people know how to run. Our body's always looking for the most energy efficient way to do it. When we're sore, we're going to change a little bit. So we might just make those changes aware to the patient and get them to be mindful of them. But I'm not going to make huge differences unless there is some sort of pattern that is a bit, a bit heavy going.
Yeah, for sure. Do you think then that you see patients with a particularly narrow step width most commonly who have this sort of injury, or the other biggest sort of risk factors that pop up?
Yeah, so it definitely comes into it. Something that we do see in runners with that narrow step width, obviously that means that there is that little bit more force coming in immediately. So we might play around with it a little bit, but it really can happen to anyone. It's just, you know, it's one of those things that's in the foot, and with the versatility of the surfaces and everything that the foot acts on, and with the complexity of a human, it can really happen to anybody. So I don't hone in too much when I see this thing like a risk factor. It's a similar sort of concept. Like, I might see a runner who strikes on their forefoot and their foot rolls all the way in, and it's like the middle of the foot's almost touching, but But the thing is, runners strong, they've got a great hop, they do a lot of weight through all of their fast pace variations. So I'm not going to play with things. That's just their movement pattern. And yeah, I wouldn't get too hung up. You know, it's not a huge percent of the problem.
Now, knowing that we can't categorically prevent injuries, are there things that runners should be considering, maybe in terms of their load management, maybe in terms of their shoe rotation, any kind of factors that we could kind of think about, I guess, in order just to kind of reduce or minimize our risk of getting these sort of tendon injuries?
Yeah, I guess, so a big thing that we talk about these days is having more than one pair of shoes if you're doing a lot of kilometers. So we like to cycle our shoes, we like to have different sorts of shoes for different types of running and everything. And we don't want to be using, this is a really big one, we don't want to be using the same shoe that we use through the day to do our running in. Really, like those, you know, those foams are compressing all day, they've got all these different patterns happening as we use them passively. And then we go and apply this really specific repetitive running force to these shoes. And they pretty much have it by the time we're running. So it's really important to have your running shoes and your shoes. And I rep sneeze all the time. I think that runners can go with anything. I will change when I'm going running because I think it's really important to have, a shoe that's right for the activity, essentially. So sometimes we have a different shoe for a faster run. So we might have something lighter. Then we have a recovery run, so longer runs might have something with a little bit more to it. And then I also like to go for a workhorse, so that's like an all-rounder. And you might have a nice stable all-rounder if you're somebody who does roll in a lot, but essentially as long as you've got a few different pairs to rotate between and listen to your body, you should be okay.
That's a good reminder. I think I definitely need to consider the changing my shoes, because often I'll like work a few hours in the morning in my running shoes and then sneak out for a little run and then come back to work and carry on my day in the same, and I wouldn't have changed shoes. And the only reason I would have changed them if I was doing like a trail run or a session or something like that. But if I'm just going for a jog, it's never been something that I have thought about, at least recently. And I know when we worked in the shoe shop, we were telling people, or at least I was saying, like, yeah, the shoes compress, so maybe alternate each day so that your shoes got time to kind of bounce back. But yeah, that's definitely something that I need to consider. So thank you for the reminder.
What about barefoot walking or like barefoot running? I know that's like was such a trendy topic a few years ago now, a little bit late to the party. But do you have any thoughts on that, I guess, specifically with Tib Post? And then I guess just a little bit more generally too.
Yeah, like with like barefoot, we could talk about that all day.
I know. I was like, it's a bit of a can of worms.
Too late.
Specifically, so just generally, barefoot is just to summarize a lot of conversation. Barefoot's good when we're young and we're developing, and when we're having pain, it might not be the most suitable thing. And the surface that we're walking on barefoot, we need to consider as well. However, specific to the post, if you're getting pain with barefoot, then you could say that you are neglecting one of the things that you could be doing to get better to where you want to be. But yeah, if you feel like you're more comfortable barefoot and you're not getting any pain, then no, that's fine. It really is very patient specific.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, that's good. I think, definitely can of worms, but good, very concise summary. Dan, I'd love to hear your personal shoe rotation. If you want to run us through what's currently in the closet for your shoes, we'd love to know.
Depends on what people have stolen off me, really. So I can only run into, I'm a big fan of wide running shoes for most people. I think that all running shoes are a little bit narrow. Me myself, so currently I just got really lucky and I got the new New Balance Dipfrom trainer. That was my first ever carbon plated shoe, and I went to my first ever swim run the other day, the sneaky 5K, and it felt delightful. I sort of understand what all the rage is about.
Nice.
And then my speed, so Saucony's speed 2s are the favorite. They got a run in the half marathon. It's so light and feel amazing. So they come in all white as well. And then the Yeah, a lot of stuff going on. So
It's good.
I just got the new Mizuno, I think it's the 5.7s, and that's so firm for like a max cushion. I love the feeling of it. And then also naturally being a flipper foot, New Balance has a big place in my heart.
The flipper foot. That was always the go-to. That was the go-to. It's like they come in and they've got a wide foot. Oh, okay, well, we'll get you a 6E and a New Balance. yeah, that's good. It's good to cater for them, but hopefully more brands are starting to do wide fits, because I think you're right. Like, not even just the width, but people's shoes are just so commonly too small for them. But yeah, that's good. I like the options.
But that's only a quarter
of the shoes that you've got.
Yeah, definitely. I give them away if they don't suit me. I give them away. But I'm really lucky. Like, so sometimes people send me shoes and I'll write like what it's like from a podiatrist's point of view, and they're happy to just send me a few there. So it means that I'll just try them out. I'll give them a few kilometers and write them something really like good to help with their point of view as well.
Wow.
Oh, nice. Oh, I wish we were your size. We could get some freebies.
That's awesome. Yeah, the wide shoe thing is super interesting. I used to always wear my shoes on the smaller side, and I now like I wear Vivos so much just like as like a day-to-day shoe, and I'm barefoot almost all the time aside from when I'm running or at work. Well, sometimes my shoes are off at work too, but like now I do not like tight fitted shoes. Like as soon as something is snug, I just do not like the feel of it. And so I've got New Balance shoes now, so I feel like I'm, you know, leveled up a notch. Yeah.
Straight to the 6E.
Not quite, but yeah, like they're spacious and they're nice. Like my toes have got room to wiggle. It's lovely.
Well, people like there's a lot of complexity at the front of the foot. You've got all this surface area, and the load is spread through that surface area. And if you restrict that surface area, like it's just going to cause issues, it's going to cause discomfort. And then once you actually, you know, put your foot to your full potential, then you really find out what everyone's talking about. So I think, yeah, once I went to it, I was always just emphasizing. I went to a 2E and I'm like, what am I doing? And now I'm like, should I go for it?
It's a slippery slope.
What about for like, this is just, I know this is a bit of a tangent now, but what about for like sprinting and like at that higher intensity type workout? Is there an advantage of having a tighter fitting shoe where like your toes are a little bit more sort of squeezed together? Because I know that people often describe, and I've had so many patients say this to me, and I know myself in the past, like that feeling of your foot sort of being like squeezed in and held together like in a spike or something feels quite good, and you feel like you can really grip the ground and it's like sort of secure. It's hard to even quite describe, but do you know what I mean? Like, is there a benefit of that, or is that just placebo?
If I was just, so without research backing what I'm going to say.
Yeah, that's right. I love it.
You could theorize that with less surface area and a tighter front of the foot for sprinting, you could theorize that it gives the foot a more rigid lever for propulsion, meaning using the plantar flexors very efficiently where they do a lot of strength and power work through. So the sprinter may potentially get a benefit from that. And then there's the other camp where you could say, so we know that tendons have energy storage and energy release capacity. So yeah, some people might argue that the 4 foot splay could help with a bit of energy transfer. But yeah, I'd be more on the, to be honest, I theorize that it would give the foot a more rigid lever and potentially power. But that is just a theory.
Yeah, and this is again like, I mean, I just find it very interesting, but I think about like my background, I did ballet and I wore point shoes. And so obviously your toes are like as jammed as they possibly could be. And there was no space. And I mean, I don't know, maybe that was why I also enjoyed like my jogging shoes being quite tight, because I was used to having a shoe, which was as tight as it could be. And like, you know, if your foot grew just a tiny bit, because I was like 13, 14, my foot was still growing. You know, you'd have to like buy a new pair of shoes every couple of months because your foot would grow like half a mil and then you'd need a new shoe. Yeah. Like, is there an obvious, I mean, gosh, that's a whole separate thing, but maybe that is the case, or like you need your foot to be really stiff, or maybe there's just the aesthetic advantage of the point shoe looking the way it does. I don't know.
I'm just imagining you doing ballet in a New Balance. Like that big white one we had on display that was like a size 18 or something. We'll have to get it going. Anyway, we could go on about so many different random things, but we should wrap this up. Thank you so much for your time, Dan. That was really insightful. I think the listeners will get a lot out of it. And if they are struggling with any of those issues, can they reach out to you to ask some questions, or what's the best way to get in touch?
Yeah, to get in touch with me, my Instagram is probably the easiest way. That's under Dan Chow Podiatrist. Apologies for all the memes. but yeah, I'm pretty contactable through that. And then if you want to find me on the Gold Coast, if you just type my name into Google, I'll come up. I'm commonly all around the Gold Coast, so you'll be able to catch me somewhere.
Awesome, very good. We'll leave all those links below, and definitely recommend people come and chat to you.
Perfect. Thank you so much, and thank you so much, you guys, for supporting podiatry so much. Like I've seen the podiatrists come on, and yeah, we all really do work well together as a team. So I really appreciate it, and so does the profession.
I mean, I think we've had more podiatrists on than any other like health professional, like anyone. I mean, it wasn't intentional, but as it turns out, we really like
feet. As you said, we love feet. The more feet, the better. Cool. All right. Thank you so much, Dan.
Thanks, guys.